this hour number three on this Monday edition of the Hagman Report. We got a great hour planned for you. In segment one, we're going to be joined by Alicia Powell. She is a journalist with WorldNet Daily. She's a frequent guest on our show, and she's going to give us, we're going to talk to her about the latest of what's going on inside D.C. With the Trump agenda, with these, with Roy Moore and the Alabama race tomorrow, as well as the, some of the latest stories out of D.C., how they're trying to bring back the allegations against Trump of women accusing him of sexual harassment before the election, and now they're trying to bring these back to make them actionable, where they're going to try to hold some kind of ethics hearing, or they expect him to resign. I don't know, but this is what they're trying to do, and we're going to get her input on that. Then we're going to be joined by Peter Chalka. Excuse me. He's going to come on after at 9:30, and we're going to talk about his latest piece that's up on Hagman Report, and it's gotten a lot of traction. And that piece is, and I'm looking for the titles here, Anatomy of CNN's Boldest Anti-Trump Fake News Story. So looking forward to that, and we'll have Alicia in just a few moments. Again, stories we were covering was the New York, what happened in New York City. Don't forget also the my dad's radio show, the Doug Hagman radio show, will be on tomorrow morning. I know there is a lot of news with Fusion GPS that's come out in the last day or two, as well as the DOJ pertaining to Trump's the Trump investigation and Fusion Fusion GPS tried to tie Trump to Clinton pedophile pal Jeffrey Epstein. That's an interesting article that's up on the Hagman Report from the Washington Post. And this goes, it details how they were trying to create scandals where there were none using Clinton friend and convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. And there is also reports of a DOJ, a Fusion GPS linked wife to one of the DOJ members who was demoted recently, and we'll get more on that later. We have with us journalist of, from WorldNet Daily, Alicia Powell. Alicia, welcome back to the show. I don't think we have audio, Alicia. We can't hear you. Nope, no audio. Yeah, we'll try and get that figured out. It's funny. Right before Eric brought her on, he said, you know, sometimes we have problems with our Skype, but that doesn't seem to be a Skype issue. Probably some settings issues. You know, when we do our show, John, we have to have, we have a setup where you have the headphones and you have a microphone setup, and you have to have your settings just right on your computer. And if you don't, things like not being able to control the volume in or out of your computer, not getting volume, it can really screw a lot of things up, and I've had many instances where, you know,
well, today,
we've been
Joe,
trying to connect and can't do it, or trying to hear each other and can't do it, but we'll get it figured out, hopefully.
Today, we were actually blessed with about a good 10, 15 seconds of surf music, so that was kind of cool. Yeah. On the Hagman Daily Show. You know, Joe, I just want to mention what we're seeing here, and really we have to give a tip of the hat to the host and founder of the Hagman Report, Doug Hagman, for calling this a good 3 weeks ago. And I want to advise our listeners and viewers to really use discernment when investigating all of the chicanery coming out of Washington, D.C., with Fusion GPS, with all of the Mueller special counsel, the investigations, and also what we're seeing with all of the allegations coming out of Hollywood and ending in the DNC with last week's mandated resignation of Senator Al Franken. This is, in my opinion, a massive effort. It's a effort at controlled conditioning to get the American public, certainly not our listeners, not most of them anyway, but to get the American public to accept the idea that an individual, she or he, must pay for their sins, be they 30, 40, 50 years in the past, right now. Now, why are they doing this? And why are they apparently eating their own, Joe? Well, it's because ultimately, they want to go after President Donald Trump. They want to prosecute him in the court of public opinion and use the alarmist, shrill, ill-informed half of the country that listens to the plastic media to dismiss this president, get rid of him based on things that he may or may not have done, Joe, in some cases going back to the early to mid-1970s.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy to see what the media has been doing. And Alicia, Eric is working to get Alicia sound up and running, and we'll be able to bring her on shortly, hopefully. John, I see an interesting trend on our website today, and that is the stats. And every day I like to go into the back of the website and look at the stats and where the traffic's coming from. And I see an article from October, the beginning of October, from Liz Crokin is gaining a lot of traction for some reason tonight. Family members of Trump accuser operated an illegal sex ring. I don't know why that is. I don't know if she republished it or it's come up in another story, but it seems to be gaining some traction for a story that was posted 2.5 months ago.
That, you know, that's an excellent catch on your part, Joe. I actually did the art layout late one night on that story because her site was down. And long story short, that story, published about 2 months ago, is completely germane to what I was just talking about. It's a story, in a nutshell, there is a woman in her early 70s out of New York City who accused, at that time, private citizen businessman Donald Trump in, I think, the mid-70s, maybe, I think it was 1977, Joe, of lifting an armrest on a commercial flight and touching her or rubbing up against her inappropriately. Now, that's sort of a story, but what really built this story out to some pretty big numbers at HagmanReport.com is that it was later discovered that members of this woman's family were involved in a full-blown child sex trafficking ring. And so it doesn't surprise me that that's beginning to trend again, because we've got sharp listeners, we've got sharp viewers, and they see what's happening from Hollywood, from the DNC, from Washington, D.C., and even to a lesser degree from Wall Street and other areas of the media. We've seen symphony conductors. We've seen Garrison Keillor from Prairie Home Companion. The accusations are flying. Joe, you know I call them Allegation Gate. Mm-hmm. And whereas I don't want to dismiss these allegations, I am certain that many of them are true. There's probably quite a bit of veracity in many of these complaints, particularly from Hollywood and from D.C., but ultimately, I agree with Doug Hagman. This is laying the groundwork to go after President Trump.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they're doing. Now, where that will end up is anybody's guess. As we said, these are allegations that were front and center before the election took place. The people still made their decision, elected Donald Trump as president, and the Access Hollywood tape was out. So is it going to be worth anything to rehash this? And you said something about Al Franken. Now, I want to be clear here, because as we saw the senators unite together, the women senators, and issue, you know, these public claims to have Franken step down. Franken said he would resign, but he would do so at the end of the year. So he's still in there for, you know, another few weeks. What happens if Roy Moore wins the election tomorrow? And then Franken says, well, you know, maybe I won't resign if this guy's going to get into the Senate. Why do I have to?
You know, I was just getting ready to ask you that, Joe. We've talked about Judge Roy Moore quite a bit on the Hagman Daily Show, and certainly we've touched on his plight this evening. I'm going to put you on the spot, Joe. Your gut feeling, Judge Roy Moore, does he pull it off and become the senator, the junior senator from Alabama tomorrow?
I say yes. But, you know, as we said in the first hour, there are conflicting poll numbers out there. We saw two different polls today showing two completely different results. One Fox News poll putting Doug Jones, Roy Moore's opponent, up by 10 points, and there was a Rasmussen poll that had Roy Moore up by 9 points. And they said the reason for that huge swing is because this is an election unlike any other, where you have, you know, it's in the Deep South, a very Republican state, yet you have a candidate that is tainted by accusation. Christian's in a tough spot, and all Alabama voters in a tough spot. But I'm going to stick with what I said last week. I'm a little less sure of it than I was then. It's probably a 50-50 chance, but I'll say Roy Moore gets elected.
Well, you know, it's interesting. At the end of the day, the people of Alabama will certainly have their say, and I like the fact that this sort of pertains to the 10th Amendment, and the fact we always need to remember, and I know we've got Alicia, Joe, we always need to remember that it is the states that give the authority to the federal government, and certainly we will hear from the state of Alabama tomorrow. Joe?
Yeah, we will, and I would guess that we would have the results before the end of the show tomorrow, and if you're trying to show a message, I couldn't see it because the paper was folded. We got backdoor communication, and we have Alicia Powell with us. Sound issues are fixed. Alicia, welcome to the Hagman Report.
Hi, thanks for having me back. I hope you can hear me okay.
We can hear you fine now.
Welcome, Alicia. How are you?
Doing well.
Good.
Well,
good.
We'll see. It's finally, after all of this suspense with Roy Moore, what's going to happen tomorrow? Our Alabama, what does this mean for the sexual harassment allegations and what the ramifications are, the court of public opinion, really? And, will Roy Moore win is the big question.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm kind of torn. I want Republicans to keep a majority, in the Senate. I don't think Roy Moore did a very good job of explicating himself on this issue. He really wavered and waffled, and if anything, I think it shows he's not a very good politician. He's not very good at lying after the Sean Hannity interview that he did. I think it's pretty clear he probably, the allegations are probably true. Does that not mean that there's different, you know, the culture 40 years ago in Alabama, maybe that was more acceptable, that was more of the norm? But we'll see. I think we still want, a lot of conservatives still want us to keep a majority in the Senate, so they might vote for him on, for that, despite the allegations. And also, again, these allegations are 40 years old. There's no real forensic way to determine if it's true or not. I think
right.
There, when's the last time you heard of a sexual allegation being made from last week? He or a month ago.
Really?
I was sexually harassed a month ago or a week ago. That's just never the case. It's always 10 years ago, 40 years ago, and it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And, you know, it'd be one thing if there was a police report to verify the alleged assault, or anything that we could look back and say, okay, you know, this does show. But even what was brought forward, especially by that Nelson lady, her credibility has been tainted, because she first attributed everything that she showed in the yearbook to Roy Moore, that he signed it and he did all that. And then, you know, later in last week, she walked back part of that, saying that she added the location and the date. And as minute as some might look at that, some might take that as, you know, we're reminded of how things work in a courtroom. Oftentimes a judge will tell a jury that if you find part of the witness's statement to be a lie or not credible, you have to look at everything as not credible. Now, those are courtroom standards, and we're not in a courtroom. But for many people, you know, that sealed the deal and said, hey, you know, not only is this lady not credible, but I'm not even going to pay attention to any of the other accusations, because this has been a smear job. And I understand that point of view, but you said, you know, it might be true. And aside from that, Beverly Nielsen, what's the other allegations, that he dated women when they were 16 years old? I haven't gone through each
Leigh one. Korfman. Leigh Korfman claims that when she was 14 years old, Roy Moore, she was waiting outside of court for her mother's divorce hearing, and Roy Moore approached her and they spoke, and then after they, he pursued her, he called her, and they went out on a date in which he drove back to his house and he got down to his underwear.
Okay.
And she was 14 years old. Now the age of consent is 17. So
16
that's the
in
other,
Alabama, yeah.
Or 16 in Alabama back then or now. So she was 14. That's really young.
Yeah.
But you know, I think even if it is true, it's just so politically opportunistic to come forward a month or two out of the election, and then when he becomes a national, really prominent figure who represents the anti-establishment and Trump and destroying the swamp, and we had that whole showdown between him and Luther Strange. Now you come forward just for based on that premise that these claims are 40 years old. I mean, I'd still, if I were in Alabama, maybe be more inclined to vote for Roy Moore despite it all, because it's just no way to prove it. Maybe the guy's just a bad politician and waffles. I mean, having interviewed him, I don't think that he answered a lot of the questions I asked him candidly, and he was kind of very scripted, but maybe that's why he waffled during the Hannity interview. There's no way to determine if these allegations are true or not. But we'll see how the it'll be a good gauge, a good thermometer of how Americans really feel, women and men, about these sexual harassment allegations that have been made against Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Roger Ailes, Bill Cosby. Okay, some of them are obviously true with this photographic evidence. Al Franken, and so Franks had to resign last week because he asked two of his staffers if they'd be willing to be surrogates, and he even offered them $5 million. So is that sexual harassment? Yeah. I think we have to define what sexual harassment is. It's a very ambiguous term, and it certainly is just a distinction between sexual harassment and sexual assault.
You know, that's an interesting point you make, Alicia. And when the information about Representative Franks came out last week, it left both Joe and I puzzled. We reported on it on the Hagmann Daily Show, and I tried as best I could as a man to put myself in the position of these staffers. And by process of the congressman's implications, their inference, or some combination thereof, $5 million was apparently offered. I would tend to think that would create the kind of pressure and duress that would qualify to some degree as harassment. But I wanted to ask you this, Alicia. This is from NewYorkTimes.com, and it just posted a few minutes ago. It says, and I quote, "The Alabama Secretary of State John H. Merrill said he expected a modest turnout of 20 to 25%. It was about 64% in the 2016 presidential election. Local officials have reported an unusually high number of requests for absentee ballots that Mr. Jones will have to garner a significant number of both Republican and independent votes to pull this one off in Alabama tomorrow. So at the end of the day, are there enough Never Trumpers in Alabama that will vote for Mr. Jones, regardless of the allegations? And the second part of the question, is this really a internal referendum on President Trump's first year as President of the United States in Alabama?
I mean, I think the Democrats really, I think their sponsoring thought, what they want to do with all these sexual harassment allegations is to go after the president. They want to bring up, he grabbed him by the woo-ha comments, and they want to have President Trump be facing more sexual harassment allegations. I mean, if you look at CNN reporting on stories of Trent Franks or Conyers, Al Franken, they also just have talking heads talking about allegations that were made against President Trump, the woman who he allegedly grabbed her butt on a plane. Trump comes out and he says, trust me, you wouldn't be, if I wanted to grab someone, it wouldn't be you, right? But I mean, that's, yes, this is maybe a referendum against the president in his first year. I think that the Democrats just want to impeach Trump, and they're going to use this sexual allegation stuff to go after the president for sure. Now, what's going to happen in Alabama tomorrow? I don't know. I mean, I think he's still going to win. That's what my instincts tell me. And then what does that mean for the sexual harassment stuff? And can you get away with it if it is true? There's no way to prove it.
Right.
He's 40 years old. Though the most egregious claim I made against him is because it was a 14-year-old, and I think he gave her alcohol, apparently, and they drank. And so, well, there was a couple of accusations. I don't know if he gave Lake Horfman alcohol, offered her alcohol, but, like, again, I just can't get over the fact, I can't stop being annoyed by the fact that this is 40 years old. That's all I see about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not even 40 years old. I mean, I haven't been alive that long.
Yeah.
You've had a long time. There's a statute of limitation that varies by state on these kind of harassment claims and allegations for you to prosecute them. And if you're beyond those, that 5 years or 180 days, whatever it is, why should we believe you? Why should you have more credit? Why do these women, we don't see their faces, their lives aren't being destroyed like these men are, the careers of these men are. It's just not fair. There's no way to prove it. Bottom line.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, there's no way to, I mean, there's no way to, as you said, to discern the facts from what's speculation, what's a political hit, what's personal feeling or misguided personal feelings. And true or not, at this point, I guess it doesn't really matter. We're going to have the vote tomorrow, and we know we're going to have our answer. And I think it's unfair to say this is a referendum against Trump if Moore loses because of of how they stacked the deck against him in the court of public opinion with these allegations. Now, more interestingly, is them trying to bring these allegations back that were came out before the elections about Trump, and have some kind of ethics committee or have the public rehash these and find a way to use this to get him impeached. And again, this puts, you know, a big taint on the allegations, because or not the allegations or the women's stories, but on the timing of this, because they, you know, it's obviously being done for political purposes. These women only spoke out once. That was before the election. They've been quiet again until, you know, Megyn Kelly rolled them out this morning, and then they're with the George Soros group today doing a press conference.
I mean, so, Megyn Kelly's another one.
Yeah.
Megyn Kelly's another one. Oh, Bill O'Reilly sexually harassed me, and Roger Ailes sexually harassed me. Well, gee, were you really complaining about that when you were covering for Bill O'Reilly at 8 o'clock on primetime and bettering your career, advancing your career? And you know?
Exactly. Exactly right.
Oh, you're so sexy. You're such a victim, and you're so sexually harassed, but you don't mind filling in for him when he goes on vacation?
Yeah. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Maybe, I mean, let's face it, women do things for opportunity. Women abuse their sexual powers, too.
Oh,
women
absolutely.
Do
yeah.
Bad things to get ahead, too. I mean, we see it all the time. There's cliches of it. So, I think I'm just a tie. I want to talk more about news, and I'm tired of hearing about, oh, he grabbed my butt in 1949.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of 1949, Alicia, just to qualify quickly what we were talking about a moment ago, the plaintiff against, at that time, Citizen Trump, is Jessica Leeds from New York, who claims in the late 1970s, Leeds is now 75. She said she is skeptical that any changes in the handling and prevention of sexual assault and harassment will occur. Says here, this is abcnewsgo.com. One of the roughly dozen women who came forward with accusations of sexual harassment or assault against Donald Trump during the presidential campaign doubts that the uproar over allegations against Harvey Weinstein will lead to lasting change. But again, this says right here, abcnews.go.com, late 1970s. It precedes your time on planet Earth, Alicia.
I mean, I would think what I see, what we see, old guys who are rich with young chicks under their arm all the time, right? Like 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds. Why wouldn't, it's not necessarily not true what Donald Trump said that got him in so much trouble, that Access Hollywood tape. Women probably do let him do that, because women, a lot of them just, they will go out with the man if he has money, and they will pursue him if he has fame. That's nothing new. We're talking about the obvious here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm tired of talking about sexual harassment. Let's talk about WikiLeaks.
Well, let's do that. We got about 3 minutes left.
We'll see
Alicia.
What happens with Alabama tomorrow.
No, and I know it, as you said, you don't like talking about it, and unfortunately,
like talking
it's
about it.
Front
it's
and center.
So much... Yeah.
But
yeah,
let's take this 3 minutes and go where you want to go.
Well, I mean, we've got the CIA posted a tweet last week, tweeted something, made a threat to WikiLeaks last week, saying that you think you can protect your sources, well, don't be so sure about that, or something along the lines of that. And so I spoke to CIA analysts, people, former CIA analysts. They've worked with the CIA for maybe 24 years. They're CIA veterans. And they all want to see Julian Assange. They don't think he should be pardoned. Julian Assange has been asking for a pardon and asking for a meeting with President Trump, and he claims he has information that will exonerate Trump from the Russia probe, and that Russia had nothing to do with rigging the election and nothing to do with the DNC hacks. So these the NSA, the FBI, and the CIA, they claim that the Trump campaign officials worked with the Kremlin to hack the DNC email mm-hmm. server, and that then they gave the data to WikiLeaks, which released it, and that's where the leaks came from throughout the campaign. Well, the CIA analysts I spoke to, they all said, the former CIA analysts, they're retired, they say, well, of course the CIA knows who the DNC leakers are. Like, there's almost no doubt. That's what they do. There's no way for them really not to know. So this ongoing Russia probe that's being waged, you know, is because it's funny, because if the CIA knows, that would mean that the CIA knows that Trump has nothing to do with the Russia, leaking the emails with Russia.
Right.
And yet, this probe is ongoing. This witch hunt is ongoing, and it's ridiculous.
It is.
And there's nothing there. There's nothing there. And whatever Julian Assange has, he needs to spill the beans already. If he has information that exonerate Trump, you want to go ahead and release how the CIA hacks devices in all, Vault 8 and Vault 7. Well, come on and put that information out that will end this stupid Russia probe. If you really do think you deserve a pardon and your heart's in the right place and you're not trying to just to destroy America, or come on out with that information.
Yeah.
Please, and, come on out. Tell us who killed Seth Rich, please. Did Hillary right? Clinton kill Seth Rich? We really want to know.
Get him, Alicia.
And then to always relate WikiLeaks as some kind of Russian operation, I see it in articles just about every day, and that really makes me mad. WorldNet Daily's own Alicia Powell, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to having you back on, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. You too.
All right. When we come back for our final segment, we'll be joined by Peter Chalka. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to our final segment on this Monday, December 11th edition of the Hagmann Report. We have Peter Barry Chalka, who is going to join us in just a few moments. I want to issue a clarification, and I'm clarifying this from other news agencies reporting. Apparently, it wasn't the Pentagon that is allowing the transgenders to serve in the U.S. military. According to the Washington Examiner, the 3rd Federal District Court allows the transgenders to serve openly in the military. This was a U.S. District Court in Seattle that issued the injunction ordering the Trump administration to allow transgender people from serving in openly in the military. And so this wasn't a decision by the Pentagon saying we're not following the law of the president. This was a court ruling in a Seattle court that issued the injunction. So this is going to obviously continue to go through legal battles. This is not over yet, but it was again reported that the Pentagon was behind this decision when it was the 3rd Federal District Court of Seattle. And I don't understand how the West Coast has become so progressive from, you know, San Diego all the way up to Seattle. It's like a part of the culture out there. I don't quite get it, but anyway.
You know, Joe, I had the opportunity to speak briefly today with Keith Hansen. And Keith Hansen, he's a regular guest here on the Hagmann Report. He's going to join us Thursday evening to talk about a number of things. And Keith mentioned to me today, I don't think he'd mind me saying this, but he said on his program today on the Keith Hansen Show that California is turning its back on the will and on the laws of Almighty God. And it is almost biblical when you think about it. The vineyards burned 2 months ago, and now we have 6 fires in Southern California, and being a former resident of Southern California, I can tell you that there are significant residential areas burning, particularly the one near the 405 and the one that's burning through Santa Clarita Valley, Rye Canyon, and the Skirball Fire. Joe?
Yeah, and the Thomas Fire is the 5th largest in state history, and that's one of the ones that's been burning since this started. I believe it was over a week ago. And it's still no signs of slowing down, and new fires have popped up. We have our guest with us, Peter Barry Chalka. He is a journalist, and he has written extensively on a number of subjects, from health to analysis of the media. And his latest piece up on Hagmann Report deals with the controversy surrounding CNN as they had to walk back one of their bombshell stories on the Trump Jr. Russia connection. It's titled Anatomy of CNN's Boldest Anti-Trump Fake News Story. And again, if you missed the interview, he was on with us on the Hagmann Daily Show on Friday, and that was an awesome interview He was with us for just about the full hour. Peter Chalka, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Joe. It's great to be with you, and it's great to see you both tonight on our Skype hookup.
Yeah, it's great to see you too, Peter. Let's jump right into this. John is co-hosting with me. My dad's in the office, but he is engaged in something else that needs to be taken care of. So let's just jump right into this. I kind of outlined a little bit of what was going on at CNN for those who were unaware, as there was another story they walked back today about Jeff Sessions and his disclosing of foreign contacts to the FBI during his Senate confirmation hearing. And it has come out today. They had to walk back. CNN had to walk back their story, saying the FBI never wanted or asked for the foreign contacts, which was a big story in May that they said, you know, pointed towards the Trump-Russia collusion story even more. But let's get into your report here. You start out by talking about the suspension of ABC's Brian Ross and the MSNBC trying to change and manipulate the ratings numbers that you also wrote about last week. But here we have a story that is very strange to me because, and I'll just boil down to what my problem with the story is the, apparently you have two sources getting the date wrong of a document they don't have possession of, but read and reported on. And I would venture to say, if I had to guess, it's only one source that they have, and they turned it into two. But give us your breakdown on this story, Peter.
Whether it was one source or two sources, they were anonymous sources. Apparently, CNN received a contact from one or two anonymous sources Friday morning or Thursday night, and Friday morning at 8 a.m., they went with the story, which became a blockbuster story and was picked up by all of the rest of the media immediately, claiming that a person had emailed the Trumps, Donald Trump Sr. and Donald Trump Jr., back in September of 2016, with information about the WikiLeaks cache of documents from the Democratic National Committee, which would be harmful to Hillary Clinton and which presumably would be of use to the Trump campaign as it entered the fall final phase of the campaign. And this the CNN report alleged that the Trumps were given access to this WikiLeaks trove before it actually went public so that they would have first look at it. And they were also given an encryption key to unlock it. The only problem was the story was completely false. A CNN claimed this email was sent on September 4th, which, if true, September 4th last year, which, if true, would have meant that the Trumps or whoever got the email might have accessed the documents before they went public. But in fact, this email, and it was a real email that was sent on September 14th, which was after the WikiLeaks documents became public. So, as we say, it was a nothing burger story. There was no there, and yet CNN went with this. And of course, the point of the story was it appeared to add credence to CNN's and the rest of the mainstream media's theories that the Trump campaign was somehow in collusion with the Russians or WikiLeaks to spin the election to their advantage and to harm Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, when probably the reverse is true. Now, another interesting fact here is it took CNN 8 full hours to correct this story. And it was within 2 or 3 hours of it first going online at 8 a.m. Eastern Time that actually some major mainstream media, including the Washington Post, called attention to its inaccuracies and basic fakery. And yet CNN left it up there. And it wasn't only online. Of course, CNN was making this the lead story all day on the cable news network broadcast here in the United States and internationally. So it was a huge story. And they didn't retract it, or not even retract it, they didn't correct it, unquote, until 3:50 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday. And they never did apologize for it. I mean, if this was a genuine error, don't you think that they would apologize to Donald Trump Sr. and Jr. for this egregious mistake, and also to their viewing public and the rest of the world? Because the rest of the mainstream media initially picked this story up and ran with it as if it was real news. So this is emerging, in my opinion, and not only my opinion, but many people who observe the media, this is emerging as a classic case history in really fake news. I don't understand how they could have gone with this story, except that they have a built-in enmity towards Donald Trump, and they're grabbing at any news that comes down the pike that they can spin against him and his administration. Now, interestingly, Joe Concha of The Hill, the very excellent media reporter of The Hill, who often appears on Fox News and on Sean Hannity. In fact, he was on Sean Hannity's radio program this afternoon, where he said that the anonymous source or sources who gave CNN this story were not sources at all, but they were political operatives. And they were probably getting this information from a House closed hearing at which Donald Trump Jr. testified last Wednesday, I believe it was, when this email, he was asked about this email. And by the way, the email was from an individual, a real individual named Mike Erickson, who sent it to the Trumps on September 14th. It was one of thousands of emails that they get. They didn't know Mike Erickson. He didn't know them. So, again, it's a nothing burger story. But Joe Concha was saying that not only was this not a source, but it was a political operative, but that he was a bad operative, that is CNN source or sources, who needs to be burned, unquote, meaning this source or sources needs to be brought out into the open so that we know who he or she is, to be exposed for his or her fakery. And this points up in the bigger picture, or between the lines, as I like to say, that journalists today, I mean, we really can't call these people at CNN, in my opinion, journalists. They're hacks, political hacks, basically, propagandists. But they don't really do reporting. What they do is they sit in their offices and they wait to get anonymous emails or calls giving them leads on stories, and then they run with it. And they don't even bother confirming these stories a lot of the time, as they did not confirm this one. They never saw even the email that was at question, and they had no way of validating it, and yet they ran with it as if it was this really huge story that was going to add to all of the stuff that they're throwing out there to hopefully, in their view, take down the Trump administration.
You know, Peter, it's interesting, in looking through your article, a two-part question. First of all, it seems that if we look at the mainstream media in the United States from a global perspective, with what CNN is doing, MSNBC coming in right in behind them, but CNN certainly the clown car of cable news, this has got to be damaging our reputation as a whole for journalism in this country from a global perspective. I'm sure you notice in doing show prep and research for your material, I would say 30% of the stuff posted on Drudge day in and day out is sourced from foreign media outlets. I'd like to hear your comment on that. And then also, you mentioned toward the end of your article that this is not the first time CNN has stepped in it this year. And of course, you point out Anthony Scaramucci, and I thought you might like to comment on that as well.
Right. Well, you have an excellent point there that credible reporting on American politics in the United States, often some of the best reporting often comes from foreign sources, in particular Britain, the United Kingdom, the London newspapers and websites, which are very vigorous in their reporting on what goes on in the United States. And you'll often read in the British press a truer, more accurate story of some basic things that are going on here that either don't make it into the American press, or we get a sanitized or shortened version here, whereas the Daily Mail, for example, will go into very long stories about what's going on in the United States. You know, you could really make a laundry list of bad reporting that not only CNN has done in the past year or years, but all of them, MSNBC, I mean, I mentioned within the last week I did an article for the Hagman Report on MSNBC attempting to fake the ratings. And this is something I wrote that CNN did as well several months ago. The television ratings are very critical to both broadcast and cable television. There's millions of dollars to be made, and the three cable news, main cable news networks now, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News, are often pretty close in the ratings, with the exception of CNN actually is usually farther behind. But CNN, to try to gain a few advantage points last week, massaged the Nielsen ratings and claimed that they were coming out stronger at the 9 p.m. hour because they were... No, I'm sorry, MSNBC last week. I'm thinking of CNN this past summer. NBC last week did the same thing that CNN did last summer in claiming that at the 9 p.m. hour, they were doing better than they were because they were substituting special programming when Rachel Maddow at MSNBC was not on at 9 p.m. against Sean Hannity. So it's like comparing apples and oranges. They're saying, oh, the 9 p.m. hour at MSNBC did well because Rachel Maddow wasn't on that night. So that show, therefore, whatever they ran, beat Sean Hannity. But it wasn't Rachel Maddow beating Sean Hannity. So, you know, this is really kind of getting down into the weeds. But when you look at it objectively and fairly, you see that they're even faking or trying to fake the ratings. So, you know, what kind of credibility do they have? It's really, really pathetic, and it's dangerous because it's a significant number, percentage of the public now, certainly the people that we respect and deal with and speak to on a daily or nightly basis here, are growing increasingly distrustful of the mainstream media in this country. And this is bad news for the future of the republic. If we can't trust on some degree of fairness and objectivity in the American media, then this is really a dangerous times ahead with all the craziness that's going on right now.
Yes, it is, Peter. And if I can, I want to go back to the CNN, the botched CNN story, and ask you about the sources. Now, you contend that we have to find out who these sources are and see what went wrong and where it went wrong. But I have a question. Could this prove that in some way that the source is inside the... Who would have access to this email, I guess, is my question. And we know that the people were not given a physical copy of it. They were allowed to read it on a computer. Could... them leaking this kind of information or doing it with the wrong facts, could this point to one specific person or in one area, I guess, is the question. But, I mean, how can we bring the source out into the public with, and do it in a way that is not putting anyone in danger?
Well, the source or sources, either lied or, CNN lied or both of them lied. The working theory right now is that the source or sources for this inaccurate information that was given to CNN, assuming that's all on the level and that's what really happened, the sources were probably part of the closed House of Representatives committee hearing last week, which grilled Donald Trump Jr. for a number of hours as part of their investigations on Capitol Hill into the alleged Russian collusion. And at that hearing, it is thought this email, the existence of this email, which figured in the CNN story on Friday, was raised and Don... So the working theory is that someone within that hearing, it might have even been a member of Congress, a Democrat member of Congress, or a staff person who knew about it, tried to leak it to CNN, and either a mistake was made and someone got the dates wrong, or it was a witting error on the part of the leaker, not the whistleblower, but the leaker, to try to throw up a lot of dirt, and smear and besmirch, Donald Trump, Donald Trump Jr., and the administration, and add weight to this ongoing nothing burger Russian collusion story. Now, again, to cite Joe Concha, the excellent reporter for The Hill online, he was on with Tucker Carlson this evening, and I believe it was there that he said that, that he added, and, I'm actually forgetting the point I was going to go to there,
That happens to me all the time, Peter. It does. It's crazy when it happens.
We're trying to keep so much information in mind, and unless you have a desk full of notes here, it can just blow away with the wind. But, he was pointing, and this gets into the sourcing again. Like, why do we need to know the sources? I guess in order to nail down why this story went bad. I mean, this was, I know what he said. He pointed out that this is how bad it really is when CNN or any other mainstream media gets the story wrong, and even if they correct it later. He pointed out that I believe it was the CNN correspondent responsible for this fake news story, a man named Manu Raju. He's 37 years old. His parents came here from India. They were both medical doctors. Manu Raju has a degree in business administration from the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and now he's an award-winning CNN reporter, and this is the kind of stuff he comes up with. Anyway, Joe Concha was pointing out that the morning that this story broke on CNN, Mr. Raju, the correspondent behind it, went to his Twitter and tweeted this big blockbuster news, and Concha had counted up the number of retweets and likes that Raju's original tweet on the fake news got, and it was in the thousands in each case, many thousands. So the story went viral. That was one indication of it.
Even the later stock market on, dropped, what, 300 points?
Actually, the stock market dropped with Brian Ross's fake news
a
week before. But you're close there. Yeah, this is how dangerous these kinds of fake news stories can be. But Joe Concha went back and looked at the tweet that Manu Raju tweeted later when the story was corrected, and that got a tiny number of tweets and likes. I mean, it was fewer than 100. Pathetic. So it got, I think he said, it got 98 times as many retweets and likes in the first incarnation of fake news than it did when it was corrected. So this is the danger of fake news. Even if it is corrected later, which often it isn't, the impression is set, the bad news is done, the damage has been done, and you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Exactly. Peter, you make an excellent point. I was just picking up by process of inference that we see a well-developed tactic here where the less scrupulous in the fake stream media can basically throw whatever they want out into the court of public opinion, public perception, and platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. can pick it up, blow it out exponentially, essentially smear someone, and in some cases ruin a career, a marriage, or both, and it doesn't even matter at the end of the day if there's any veracity in the story whatsoever. Peter, I have a question for you. We seem to be at a time right now that would certainly rival the time of Hearst and Pulitzer, where we get the term yellow journalism back at the turn of last century. Now, we know these newspaper barons cooked up the news to sell a lot of papers. I would submit to you that the fake stream media today is cooking up the news to sell out a president. Do you know, Peter, what pulled us up by our intellectual bootstraps and got us away from the yellow journalism era of Pulitzer and Hearst? And if so, what can we do today to get out of this ridiculous fake stream centrifugal conundrum of garbage?
Excellent question, and it's precisely relevant, because my understanding of that period 100 years or so ago, when yellow journalism, as you've noted, was kind of the coin of the realm, even though there were some leading, well-funded journalistic entities at the hands of Hearst and others that were the big-selling newspapers of the time, there was a very competitive nature to the businessmen, to the business then. In New York City, for example, there were 20 or more newspapers competing on a daily basis, many of them with both morning and afternoon editions. So even when you had some of the major papers practicing this more fake news of the era, you had counter papers from different ideological points of view, which gave you a range of opinions. And I would say that's kind of similar in a way to what we see now with, of course, the mainstream media, which is almost uniformly fake and untrustworthy, with the exception of Fox News and some limited number of others, Sinclair, Circa News, etc. But we have, of course, the internet and the alternative press, which is providing that alternative view from a variety of points of view. And if anything is going to save us and give us hope in this fake news era that we're now in, it is the internet and the alternative press. And before we run out of time, I just wanted to mention this, if I could, to the audience that's sure. watching or listening live right now and also via podcast. I've taken a leap into social media reluctantly and gradually with starting up a Twitter account, which I did in August of this year. And I would really like to encourage listeners and viewers to please check out my Twitter, which is simply twitter.com/pchowka, P-C-H-O-W-K-A. And the reason I mention this is not for any need for personal aggrandizement. I don't make any money from this. I'm not looking for fame and fortune. What I'm looking is to push my number of followers over the 2,000 mark, because I'm very close, and then grow from there. And the reason the numbers are important is Twitter is a truly viral medium. And when you start to build up followers who are actually engaged, as fortunately many of my followers are, I don't even like that term followers, but we have to use that, that is what spreads this information out. And I basically use my Twitter as a listing, as a contents of the broadcasts that I'm doing, like this one. I don't retweet. I've only retweeted one thing so far, so it's kind of low intensity. So if you follow me, you're not going to get inundated with notifications and messages. And an advantage of following me is it not only helps me and us at the Hagmann Report to get the story out, but if you want, you can direct message me, and I will be happy to respond to you, whatever your concern or comment is. So I would really appreciate people's support on that. And other than that, I think to wrap this up with a bow here, hopefully before we close, and look at, again, the big picture, connecting the dots, looking at it between the lines, what we're seeing here in the aggregate is, again, not only fake news, but the outlines of a soft coup, which is trying to take down the Trump administration. That is really escalating. Today, we saw two leading senators, Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, who plans to run for president, and Ron Wyden, the socialist from Oregon. They both demanded that Donald Trump resign from the office of the presidency because there are outstanding allegations against him by several women that he sexually harassed them. And as has been said before by your previous guest, by Doug, by me, early on, this whole Me Too meme of women claiming harassment at the drop of a hat now is being manipulated by the shadow government, the deep state, the media, and the Democrat Party to take down Donald Trump, which is not to negate women who have a legitimate case to make against men who have oppressed them. But, I mean, let's get real here. As Alicia Powell, I believe, was mentioning before I came on, you know, 40-year-old allegations coming out of nowhere hurled at people, and then like Judge Moore in Alabama, and then we see day by day the accusations being whittled down to less and less because of the fakery involved in them. So there's some serious dirty business going on here, and we can't lose sight of the big picture. And, you know, I tried to call attention to this danger, I think, 2.5 weeks ago, including in an article I did for the Hagmann Report, that when the story of Al Franken broke, I said, be careful, conservatives, what you wish for. If you want to fry him and kick him out of the Senate based on just some allegations, watch out, because the real target here is Donald Trump. Certainly not to absolve Al Franken. I'm no fan of his, but we do have the rule of law here, hopefully, and you're innocent until proven guilty, and I would really like to see that standard brought back, which would only hopefully protect Donald Trump until and when he is found guilty in a court of law, which my prediction is will never happen for either Russian collusion or all of these harassment claims that are being made against him for political purposes.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Peter, and your analysis is right on the money. We're at the very end of the show here. Just want to say I like your Christmas decorations, especially the little cat with the Santa hat on it. That's really cute, and I think that's my favorite in your... behind you.
That, I believe that cat, that stuffed cat behind me, I believe that is Pete the cat. That was a Christmas gift to me several years ago, and that's that guy's name. And then briefly also earlier, You may have noticed the second cameo appearance of Biggie, the gray cat, and several people have commented he is not a Russian blue cat. He does look like a Russian blue, but Russian blues have very particular characteristics, and go to RussianBlue.com, which is one of my websites, to check that out if you're cat-oriented. But it's a pleasure once again, gentlemen, and I'll look forward to our next meeting on Skype.
Absolutely. It was great to have you, Peter. Thank you so much. John, I want to thank you so much for co-hosting the show tonight. Had a lot of fun. Ladies and gentlemen, join us tomorrow on the Hagman Daily Show at 12 on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you so much, Joe. Thank you to Doug Hagman for this opportunity. God bless you all. We'll see you tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern. Good night.